ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 19, सॉरी कैंटो 3, Chapter 19, Text 1, Translation and Commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maitreya Uvacha, Avadharya Virinchasya, Niravyalikam Ritangvachaha, Prahasya Prima Garabhena, Tad Apangena Sograhit. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Purport: the word Nirvyalika is very significant. The prayers of the demigods or devotees of the Lord are free from all sinful purposes, but the prayers of demons are always filled with sinful purposes. The demon Hiranyaksha became powerful by deriving a boon from Brahma, and after attaining that boon he created a disturbance because of his sinful intentions. The prayers of Brahma and other demigods are not to be compared to the prayers of the demons. Their purpose is to please the Supreme Lord. Therefore the Lord smiled and accepted the prayer to kill the demon. Demons, who are never interested in praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they have no information of him, go to the demigods, and in Bhagavad Gita this is condemned. Persons who go to the demigods and pray for advancement in sinful activities are considered to be bereft of all intelligence. Demons have lost all intelligence because they do not know what is actually their self-interest. Nashtatmanolpabuddhayaha. Krishna describes demons in Bhagavad Gita. They are lost to themselves and have very little intelligence. Even if they have information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they decline to approach him. It is not possible for them to get their desired boons from the Supreme Lord because their purposes are always sinful. It is said that the dacoits in Bengal used to worship the goddess Kali for fulfillment of their sinful desires to plunder others' property, but they never went to a Vishnu temple because they might have been unsuccessful in praying to Vishnu. Therefore, the prayers of the demigods or the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always untinged by sinful purposes. Glance laden with love. Krishna loves Brahma. He is his own son. Everyone's a son of God. Some are directly and some are indirectly. And Krishna, loves Brahma. Of course, Krishna is here not manifested as Krishna, as Vishnu. He knew Brahma's purpose. This is the crux of this purport. Srila Prabhupada picks up on this point, that he knew the purpose of Brahma's prayer. Prior to this, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha became powerful. Hiranyakashipu became powerful by getting a boon from Brahma. He also prayed to Brahma. But the intention is different. Krishna knows everyone's intention. He's in everyone's heart. So Krishna, he wants to see what is our intention. As that verse goes, that Murko vadati Vishnaya, Pandit vadati Vishnave, Upaya tu Saman Punyam, Bhavagrahi Janardana. Krishna Janardana, he accepts the feeling of the person. A murko vadati Vishnaya, a foolish person, or one who is not conversant with this rule of Sanskrit grammar, may say Vishnaya. And someone who knows, they will say Vishnavi. But Krishna awards them both the same pious result because he accepts the feeling. Krishna also knows and accepts the feelings of persons who are sinful. He doesn't accept their feeling. But he gives them, he reciprocates with them accordingly. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajamya. He reciprocates accordingly. The demons, they may pray, but in prayer there's an attitude of supplication, of submission. But the purpose is not to admit one's inferiority. It's not actual submission. It's pretentious. As a demon, he may take a lowly position just to get some boon from someone, and then use that to work against that very person. That example is there of Vrikasura in the, I believe that's the last chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. He took a benediction from Lord Shiva that anyone whose head he touched, that head would split into two. Then immediately he wanted to touch Lord Shiva's head. So he was showing much devotion to Lord Shiva, but his intention was different. He had a sinful purpose. Now, practically everyone in this world has a sinful purpose. In Gita, Krishna says, Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritin arjuna arto jignyaso artharti gyani cha bharatarshaba. A person who is, four kinds of people, those who are distressed, desiring wealth, the inquisitive, and the wise, approach Krishna. Now, among those who are distressed, they have some, and those who desire money, they both have materialistic purposes. They want to be free from distress so that they can go on living in this world happily. Krishna calls them pious because their intention is not to be grossly sinful. If they were grossly sinful, they wouldn't approach Krishna at all. They wouldn't have the tendency to do so. Yishang twantagatang papang jananang punya karmanam te dvanva moha nirmukta bhajante manjudravradaha. The persons who are actually very pious, they can approach Krishna. Otherwise, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, they're inclined to worship demigods. They prefer to worship demigods. They may see Krishna and they're not attracted to him because they're not pious. They may be attracted to Kali, whose form is horrible, but they find that pleasing. Gaura Rupa, that is described in the Bhagavatam. There are the horrible forms, and there are the there are nine forms of Durga. One of the Chinnamashtaka, her head is chopped off. She's holding her own head chopped off. That's one of them. Chamundi, all these different forms. They're horrible forms, but some people they like that. They say, "Oh, Shakti, Shakti, lot of power. Let me get some Shakti from Shakti." Very powerful, but they're not attracted to the beauty of Krishna, to the charm and pleasingness of Krishna, because they're sinful. And what is the definition of the definition of sinful is that those who are sinful, they're not attracted to Krishna. Why are they not attracted to Krishna? Because they're sinful. And what does sinful mean? To not be attracted to Krishna. So, and actually, that's a fact. Yes, yasti bhakti bhagavate kinchana sarvaya gunais tatra samasate suraha harava bhaktasya kato mahanguna. Manora tenasati dhavato bahihi. Those who are devotees of Krishna, they naturally develop all good qualities. And those who are not devotees of Krishna, they don't have any real good qualities. Srila Prabhupada said, there's no need to independently make campaigns for promoting vegetarianism or peace or any such things. People will automatically become peaceful and vegetarian if they're a devotee of Krishna. Whereas if they're not a devotee of Krishna, then they may have very good intentions, but because they're on the manoratam, they're on the chariot of the mind, without their intelligence being fixed in proper knowledge, then they may have very good intentions and they may change. Someone who's very saintly apparently in their behavior, they may change and become very, very grossly sinful also. So Krishna, he knows the intention. Brahma spoke very sweetly, free from sinful purposes, and Krishna accepted his prayer. Demons can also speak very sweetly. It's not necessarily that demoniac people are always shouting and screaming and yelling and being directly nasty. They can also be very nasty in a very roundabout way or a seemingly nice way. They may talk of humanism, liberalism, democracy, equal rights, human rights, and invade other people's countries and stir up rebellions, and all in the name of higher principles. We also see in the religious field or the spiritual field, or the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that some of the worst behavior possible or imaginable is all carried out in the name of a high ideal. That's one reason why the modern atheism is, they point that out, that once someone can convince others that person has got the sanction of God behind him, then he can mislead them and exploit them and get them to do terrible things which they would not otherwise have dreamed of doing. In the name of higher principles, people often can forego all principles. As in Nazi Germany, in the name of serving the German state, then they could do all horrific activities. So the intention should be pure. Sweetness, yes. Brahma, he spoke very sweetly, and his intention was pure. But it's not necessarily that if someone speaks sweetly that their intention is pure. They may be doing that to deliberately mislead someone. But Krishna knows the intention. You can't mislead him. As when Duryodhana asked Krishna, "Thou, you eat, you come and take your meal with me," but Krishna refused, because if you take a meal with someone, then you become obliged to them. Srila Prabhupada said that, and that's why he said that's one reason why we should give everyone prasadam. He said temple means there must be prasadam distribution. And then people become obliged. That is one of the six items of love, or actually two of them, puṅkte bhojayate chaiva, feeding others and accepting to be fed by others. So that's a good way to overcome difficulties and differences between devotees. If we invite, come and take prasadam. But Krishna, he was invited by Duryodhana. You come and take your meal with me, but he said, no, I won't take with you because you're the enemy of my devotees. I won't take with you. So, Krishna knew his intention. He didn't, Krishna refused to be caught, pulled into Duryodhana's charad of welcoming Krishna, because he knew that Duryodhana was apparently being nice to Krishna for his own purpose, for his own sinful purpose. It wasn't out of love that he wanted to feed Krishna, but he wanted to manipulate Krishna and make Krishna dependent on him. So Krishna didn't accept that. Now, there is the system of various demigods, that you can worship different demigods. And persons who are from the monotheistic Western traditions, they criticize this, the worshipping demigods. But actually we can understand from this purport, as Srila Prabhupada explains here, that this gives an opportunity to people who are sinful to start to pray. Now, if you're very sinful, like Hiranyakashipu, and later Ravana, the same person, then even though they pray, they don't become free from their sinful tendency. But even then, there's some containment, because they follow Vedic principles to some extent. Of course, Ravana, by kidnapping women and this and that, then he flouted all the Vedic principles. And Hiranyakashipu was against the Vedic principles. So, that kind of demigod worship, that you won't become purified. But there's some level of purification by those who follow the Vedic principles of worshipping demigods, because not everyone's prepared to. They're not sufficiently pious to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they can worship various demigods, but there is a problem if they think that, if they make some philosophy that this demigod is supreme. Then they become actually against the Vedic principles. If they have no philosophy and they're just materialistic and they worship demigods, then maybe that's better than making some philosophy. Just like Shaiva Siddhanta, that Shiva is supreme. Or the Shaktas, they say that Shakti is supreme. And there are statements in Shastra for such people, that Shakti is supreme, or Shiva is supreme. So I may say, well, better be a Christian or a Muslim, they just worship one God, but because their whole ethos of their religion is materialistic, they don't rise to the standard of pure God consciousness, and mostly they deny the personality of Godhead. We find in the world's most prominent manifestation of Christianity, the Roman Catholic Church, that there is practically a culture of demigod worship. All the different saints, it's just like demigod worship. They have the saint of carpenters, and the saint of travelers, and the saint of patron saint of England, killed a dragon, Saint George, and there's patron saint of Scotland, Saint Andrew, and patron saint of Ireland is St. Patrick, and so on and so on and so on. So, and they have festivals celebrating the day of this, every day of the year is the patron, some saint's day. And they, in Italy, they'll take the image around the church, and it's just like a Rath Yatra, in an Indian temple. So it's just like demigod worship. There was a survey of Catholics some time ago. If you're in great danger, who do you pray to first? And Jesus was about number 7 on the list. It was mostly the Mother Mary. It's the Durga cult. That's what it is. That's why Christians were surprised when they came to India and they made their churches that the Hindus would come and pray also. Because they just, well, it's another form of God, you know. Whoever's there, take whatever's going from whoever's there ready to give it. And Hindus have no problem up to the present day. In Tamil Nadu, there's one of the most visited holy places is the shrine of Our Lady of, what is it, Velankanis? The Hindus go there as much as the Christians, because that deity of Maria, she's famous for giving benedictions. So that seems to be a natural tendency, worship of the of Shakti, of Mother. But in the most people, they worship Durga. They may be worshipping Mary, but their attitude is that of worshipping Durga. Dhanam Dehi, what is that? Dhanam Dehi, Rupavati Bharya Dehi, give me this, give me that, give me everything else. Ya Devi Sarva Bhutana, forget it. So there are so many prayers to Durga. Srila Prabhupada mentions here that Dacoits of Bengal, they used to worship Kali to get power from her for plundering. They wouldn't worship Vishnu because he doesn't give that kind of benediction. There was the whole cult of the Thuggies in India previously, which was that was all over India, not just in Bengal. That from that the English word thug has come. Have you heard the word thug? It means some kind of violent, nasty person. Often the idea of some violent criminal. So it was going on for centuries. Actually, the British, they smashed it, but they had some quasi religious background to it all. Even though even the majority of them were Muslims after the, but still they all worshipped Kali. And they had the idea that there are the forces of creation headed by Vishnu and the forces of destruction headed by Kali. So we're the servants of Kali. So it's our religious duty to kill people and take their goods. They did. They weren't just stealing, but they considered it their religious duty to kill people. Violently kill them. So the British were able to smash that. Previously, it was going on for hundreds of years. What are you looking at? Looking at the birds. You want to run there and chase them away. So they had some kind of religion. Well, actually, it was religion. They worship Kali. They pray to Kali. They feel Kali is protecting us. This is our service, our offering. Not any developed philosophy, but that idea. It's all going on by them. By the power of Kali, and this is what we're born to do this, because they're born in that caste. And the British made the Criminal Tribes Act or something, which was meant to suppress all these people. Just a caste system. So if you're born the son of a potter, you become a potter. If you're born the son of a weaver, you become a weaver. If you're born the son of a dacoit, killing people and robbing them, then you also have to become. It's the caste system. So you have to be, you don't have any choice. It's your duty to do so. So, as I was saying, this, the the four kinds of people who approach Krishna, two of them do so for materialistic reasons, which means there's a hint of sin in there. They do have some sinful purpose, but Krishna's kind enough that he doesn't take it as he takes the good side, that they're approaching me, and even though they may want to enjoy this world, if they approach Krishna, then at least they're going to be free from the gross sinfulness, and they'll become purified by approaching Krishna. So there is a, although in this material world there is the whole basis is the sinful desire to be separate from Krishna, but there is nevertheless a difference between punya and pap. So even with some desire which is basically sinful to enjoy this world, if one desires to do so in a manner in accord with the higher sections of the Vedas, then that is considered punya. And higher, and there's higher and higher and higher. That be higher begins with the karma kanda. Then one has to lower than that. There are sections for persons in tamaguna also, worship of Kali. Piety begins with karma anusthana, performing one's duties according to the karma kanda section of the Vedas, and performing yajnas and all these things. So that's beginning. That's not sinful, that's pious. That won't give love of God. Jamma koti sukritaya labhyate Krishna bhak, Krishna, what is that? Krishna bhavana rasa. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavana mati. Kriyatam yadapi. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavana mati. Kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate. Chatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam jamma koti sukritayana labhyate. This Krishna bhakti rasa bhavana matihi, which Srila Prabhupada succinctly translates as Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, very difficult if you want to give some precise translation. Krishna consciousness. If it's available for sale, and buy it. And what is the price? Lolyam, strong desire, the only price. And many lifetimes of punya, many lifetimes, that will not be the price for Krishna consciousness. And so, Krishna consciousness is available, bhaktis tu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate, from devotees, pure devotees of Krishna, but still there is, although that's the ultimate and actually the only real goal of the Vedic path, there's a difference between punya and papa, and Krishna is pleased by persons who are, he accepts the piety, he's pleased with that. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna's being scolded by the gopis is more pleasing to Krishna than the staid prayers of the Vedic prayers of the Brahmanas. So the two, the gopis, they may scold Krishna, the older gopis, when Krishna's a child and he steals their butter. And then his lovers, the younger gopis, they may also scold Krishna. But that doesn't mean that the prayers of the Brahmanas are not pleasing to him. But it just underlines how much more pleased Krishna is by the prayers of the gopis. But it doesn't mean... he is pleased by the prayers of the Brahmanas, who, just like he's pleased with the prayers of Brahma. Brahma is not on the level of the gopis of Vrindavan, but Krishna's happy with him, he's pleased with him, he loves him. That one name of Krishna is Stava Priya. He likes to be praised with the Vedic hymns. It's meant for praising him. So people who are very sinful, they won't have any inclination to say this at all. They won't desire to. So Krishna knows the intention. We always have to see what is in our heart, what is our intention. But that also, that should be regulated by knowledge, but we should know what Krishna wants of us. We may think that, well, I'm doing everything with a good intention, but we have to know what Krishna wants of us. We can't say what is good intention according to our own definition. So, nirvyalika, free from all sinful purposes. This, the workings of the mind are very subtle. So we have to always examine what is our intention. Are we really doing everything for Krishna's pleasure? Or are we harboring some material desire? That material desire, even very subtle, can always come. We may do something, yes, I want to do this something selflessly for the service of Krishna. We do it like that, and then again we become proud. Oh, I was so selfless. Others should praise me for that. And again, the sinful desire has entered. So, then we always have to pray for the mercy that we can be free from material desires. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dasa Ranudas. Prarthana Karai Shada Narottamadas, Narottam Das always. Praise to be situated as the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Very high ideals in Krishna consciousness. Yes, it's a very high ideal from the platform of this material world. Otherwise, it's just normal. To be Krishna conscious is normal, but because we're all abnormal in this material world, and we think that being selfish is normal, then we take Krishna consciousness to be a very high ideal. Actually, it's just being normal, that's all. Jivesu Rupoi Krishna Nitya Das. In a society of thieves, if someone wants to become honest, then he's just to stop stealing, then he would be considered as, oh, he's become so elevated, so pure, they might kill him for that. A reformed thief is dangerous for the other thieves. He might grass on them, as the saying goes. He might reveal who they are, what their plans are. Yeah, so we have a high ideal. Those who have high ideals may use it for exploitation. Yes, that may be done directly, cynically, or it may be done subtly also. You'll hardly get anyone to admit that actually I'm just in this Krishna conscious movement because I want to get a good position and manipulate the funds. You'd hardly get anyone to admit that, even to themselves probably, although we do see it goes on. that some may be interested in position and power and income and all these things. Here in India, to be a temple president, it means you have, in most cases, a lot of money coming in and no real supervision as to how it's spent. So it's a setup for dishonesty. I'm not saying that everyone is dishonest, but I do doubt that everyone is completely honest. Or they may justify it in their mind. Well, you're doing everything for Krishna. So my building a house, private house, I deserve it because I've sacrificed so much sitting in my office and sending everyone out to collect money all these years. So they may justify it in their own mind. What is that? That we have this saying that what is it? Preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. Preaching is the essence. Utility is the principle, and purity is the force. So this is the ideal. That becomes perverted into bucks are the basis. Money is the basis. Preaching is the force. Preaching is the excuse. In the name of preaching, we're collecting lots of money. Futility is the principle, and purity is a farce. So this saying came up because it was perceived by some that in the name of the high ideals that certain individuals had hijacked the workings of the Krishna Conscious Movement, at least in their own local jurisdiction, for their own ulterior purposes. But again, even in their own minds, they may not admit it, although it may be clear to others. There are not many people who would say, "No, yeah, actually, I'm a cheater." Someone walks up to you on the street and making a survey. How do you make your living? By cheating people. So many people are making their living by cheating. The whole advertisement business industry is one of cheating people. Coca-Cola, cheating people. The whole medical industry, a lot of it is just cheating people like this. In India now, every birth has to be cesarean, unless they don't have, even if they don't have enough money to pay for it, they have to take a loan, because there's more money in cesareans than there is in natural deliveries. So all of a sudden, it used to be a very rare thing, which you hardly heard about, but all of a sudden, every birth requires a cesarean operation. It's clearly for the money factor, and even if people are poor, they don't care, they'll make them take a loan. Oh, cheating, what? Okay, Monsanto. What about the Indian politicians are getting ready for their election by saying this and that, and that. No one's talking about all the farmers, the mass suicide of farmers. No one talks about it at all. They're all in cahoots with Monsanto and company. But they'll never admit they're all. This your Karnataka chief minister, exposed as a total crook. He won't admit it, and he's going back and wants to get back into politics. This whole Telangana issue, why the Simandra ministers are against it, because they're all craw parties with their business interests in Hyderabad. They don't care. If they could get more. And why they're agitating for Telangana, because the ones who are agitating, it's a business for them in the making of the state, and then once it's there, they'd also make business. So they're just cheating people. The Osmania University students are out on the streets fighting, and the ministers are making money. So, cheating, who's going to say? Who's going to say, yes, well, actually, we don't really care about the people of Telangana at all, but we want to make lots of money. That's actually why, no one's going to say that. The cheating is clear. The hypocrisy is clear. This Julius Assange, he's been in the Ecuadorian embassy, holed up practically in prison in London for how long now? It's more than a year, maybe 2 years. They're spending so much money to monitor that. It's like £15,000 a day it costs to keep the police outside and monitor so he doesn't escape. Why? He's accused of some improper sexual activities. He had sex with some woman who wasn't... Anyway, I won't get into the details here, but she's accused him of... It's not even rape in the sense of grabbing him in a dark corner, but just... Anyway, it's a relatively minor offense. And they're spending so much money to try and it's an international issue, and they want to try and get. Why should the British taxpayers pay so much money for someone to try and ensure that someone who's committed a relatively minor crime in another country, and he's a citizen of another country, it's clearly because. They don't like that he's exposed their cheating and lying and corruption. So, the politicians talk all high things, and they do all low things. And people who find out, they either go along with the politicians because it's easier for their mind to do so, or they complain, but almost everyone in that situation would do the same thing. And almost everyone in their own situation does the same thing, if they have the opportunity. So, one of the tests we'll see who's actually a Vaishnav is that they don't have the exploitive mentality. They don't deal with others in a manner, so what can I get out of them? What can they do for me? In one sense, we could say that Srila Prabhupada, he engaged devotees, and even he put them in situations which might have seemed bad for their spiritual life. Like most of the Western devotees Srila Prabhupada brought to India, they had a hard time and they ran away. And Srila Prabhupada insisted on bringing them, but that was for the aim of spreading the Krishna conscious movement. There's a saying, I don't know who said that, but it's not by a devotee, but you can tell someone's character by the way he treats people from whom he's got nothing to gain from them. Interesting, huh? And it may be also that you've got nothing to gain from them, but you want to gain the reputation of being a philanthropist. So there are poor people, and then you make some arrangement to feed them and send their kids to school. You've got nothing to gain from them, but you can gain from them their gratefulness, and you can gain from them the reputation of being a philanthropist. That also. It's how many philanthropists? They're doing it because they want to be known as a philanthropist. Some years ago, one godbrother told me in Bangalore, he was in contact with some people that they'd come up from nothing and made lots of money, and now they've got their money and their reputation and their position, and now they want to do some charitable work so that they can be known as a philanthropist. And they'd approached him for something or other. So, as the saying goes, you can't become a millionaire without doing some cheating or hocus pocus or something. But they want to be known as a philanthropist, get a good reputation. Bill Gates, after cheating the whole world with his substandard software and operating systems, and making practically aiming at a monopoly. Actually, there should be some regulatory board, seeing as the whole of the world runs on computers. There should be some regulatory board to see who's actually got competent software, isn't it? Because seeing as people have to use it, you don't get that much choice. It's, what choice do you have? You have Mac and Windows and Linux, and there's not much else. But practically, Windows has cornered the market. So anyway, promoting his substandard software everywhere, he became filthy rich, and then he wants to, reputation as a philanthropist. Doing things like promoting birth control, and he's also got a stake in Monsanto, so he's promoting in Africa, doing so much to help Africa, helping Africa by bringing them the gift of Monsanto. Their whole way of thinking is perverse. Their idealism. He may even think himself that he's doing good for others. Like, I know one doctor who's he has an abortion clinic, and he thinks he's helping people. They come for an abortion, and he's helping. You see, so many girls come to me, they're unmarried girls, and they're helping them by giving them abortion. And married and unmarried, both, they have abortion. Poor family, they couldn't afford any more kids. So yeah, it's a public service, that's what he did. So we have to know what is what, according to Shastra. Idealism based on ignorance is going to be sinful. Like, even if you think, I'm doing a service to others by performing abortions, you still have to suffer the sinful reaction. Even if you think it's good, so we should know what is actually the ideal. And we have to endeavor to free our hearts from the sinful desire to exploit others. All right, Kunja Bihari. You're going to be a good boy all your life. You're never going to exploit anyone. He doesn't know what, he can't understand what I'm saying at all. Will he be a saint or will he be a sinner? We have to see. Training is there that he'll be a saint. Let's see as he grows up. Hare Krishna! Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.